Hi, my name is Bob.
Hi, Bob.
I'm an adult child.
Hi, Bob.
I'm an equal opportunity addict. Came to the program through Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just passed my 29th birthday, February 16th. Yeah. Don, I think you're a spiritual giant. You don't have any resentments. Maybe you should be doing the show. Right? So I am so full today. I went to the workshop that was done by Herb and Ellen Berger today, and there was just so much good information. And I've heard them many times before, and I love and admire them. And I'd almost just like to talk about what I learned today rather than my own story, but that's not why I'm here. And when I'm feeling full and when I have got a love fest going on with my sweetie and our new dog, my mind rambles. I have ADD, which I didn't really understand or know about until I was with my sweetie for a couple of years, and thank God for that diagnosis, and that a drug called Strattera is now on the market, because ADHD, ADD used to be treated by with Ritalin, which is speed, and I'm an addict, so, you know, even if I'd known what was going on with me in that respect, it would have been difficult for me to take that medication, because my drug of choice is more. And I wanted to completely avoid my feelings, primarily because of how crazy my environment was at home. So I was feeling a lot of feelings when I came in here today, seeing some familiar faces, and I'd had a full day. So I walk into the door of the chapel and I see this television. And my first thought was, my God, I'm in the chapel of the Immaculate Super Bowl. But I'm pretty sure that that television is for when the church is filled up, so they would broadcast in here so that people were connected to information. I hope that's the case, because being connected to information is really important. And before I came to you, information was really, really scary for me. I hope what happens tonight during my talk is that I'll mostly share about recovery and ACA recovery and what's happened. But I'll give just a little bit of a background, and before I do, I want to say thank you to George and thank you to this meeting for inviting me here tonight. I too, when everybody was checking in, felt so connected with everything everyone was saying. And that's a delightful thing to feel. It really is good to learn to come home and welcome to your new journey and a continuing journey for all of us. So I'm beginning to think I might have a book in me. And I'm glad that that feeling is coming up now, because had I written my first book, it would have been entitled My Sister is an Only Child. Because our experiences within the same household with a 4-year separation were night and day. If she told the story about our family and I told the story about our family, until she began second stage recovery, you would think that we were not related. I don't know whether it's 11 or 12 times, but that's how many times I moved in 11 years. An average of once a year. The most was twice in a year, which happened twice. Very close to 3 times in a year. And my experience as a young child was seeing boxes packed in the hallway of wherever we were living. And I was horrified. Because each time that I moved, I would have to make new connections. The concept of having friends was foreign to me. And with the moves that were happening, I became more and more competitive, which only happened to be a benefit when I was in my athletic career. That was kind of beneficial. But it had no benefit at all with trying to integrate with people. or fit in. None. And I would say to my mom, Mom, are we moving? Oh, no, honey, we're not moving. And then the next thing I knew, we'd be all the way across country. And the explanations that were given about why the moves were happening didn't make any sense. And one of the things that I embrace about ACA recovery is I can, in my reparenting process, begin to take the eraser out to say, yes, these things happened, but I'm not going to make them happen for me anymore. I am not going to tell my inner child mistruth or guide my inner child in a way where I'm not reparenting myself, and that feels really good. And when, as a human being, I slip up, which happens from time to time, I have an inner core circle of people and a partner who I have true intimacy with, meaning me being me and letting you see me, into me you see, and we have invited healthy confrontation into our lives together, meaning that it's the issue that gets confronted, not the person that gets confronted. So there's pushback in our relationship, and that is really helpful. In AA, one will hear anger as the dubious distinction of normal men. That is preposterous, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have a conversation with Bill. I know that there are certain elements of the Big Book, not many, but a few, where he thought maybe a rewrite would be appropriate. And there are just a couple of pieces that actually have been written. For example, rarely have we seen a person fail who thoroughly followed our path. It used to say never have we seen a person fail who had thoroughly followed our path. And that was too defined, so that it was shifted. But where was I going with that? I lost my train of thought. What's that? Oh, yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. Don, you're a magician. Anger expressed appropriately equals intimacy, energy, and serenity. Anger expressed appropriately equals intimacy, energy, and serenity. That concept comes from a very, very early pioneer in ACA by the name of John Lee. Any fellows in here read The Flying Boy? It's probably a penny on Amazon by now. Written a long time ago, initially for men, but it applies to all of us. And in that book, John discusses the difference between detachment and disorientation. So my experience to protect myself in my childhood was to detach from my body. Most of the way that I did that was through sugar. I became addicted to sugar at a very, very early age. And I truly believe that that was my first drug of choice. And as a child, one of the things that I know to be true as I watch healthy children today is that they're very well connected. Insides and outsides match perfectly. When we're born, we need food, we need nourishment, we need love. We cry. We express ourselves. And hopefully, we get response from that, from a parent. Usually, unless it's a fetal alcohol syndrome or a crack baby or something like that, where there is total disconnection right out of the gate, there's already a movement away from insides and outsides matching. But for the most part, insides and outsides match. So my journey and my discovery through ACA is that through living life on life's terms, I got further and further and further away from my insides and outsides matching. So I used alcohol, drugs, food, fantasy, whatever it was available at the time, all in the pursuit of trying to pull back being in the here and now and having reality make sense. men that I work with in program today in ACA or other 12-step groups that I sponsor men in, have a couple of things in common that I relate to very closely, and the journey in ACA has helped me become a better sponsor for sure. One of them is a pushback with the concept of a higher power. Well, for ACAs, for me, my higher power would tell me things like the boxes are in the hallway, we're not moving. Or because of my mother in particular's own dysfunctional behavior and her own problems with her own childhood experiences, there were a lot of lies perpetuated. My mother was late for everything. I'd hear her on the phone say all kinds of excuses, and if I said something to her just because I wanted information, I needed to find out, why would you say this when this is not the case? I got beaten. So I have physical abuse in my background. Most of what happened with me that brought me here to you was that my inner being, really my intuition, which is intact in all children until it gets migrated away, was that I could see things that didn't make any sense. And I grew up with my parents getting married to each other twice and divorced twice. Remarried in a whole new church wedding as if everything had magically come together for them. And my mother's father, my maternal grandfather, was a Methodist minister. So at one point in time, I literally lived in a house surrounded by a white picket fence. And because of the religious aspect of what was going on in our lives, we were always told about how much love there was in the family and how wonderful and beautiful a family was. But what was going on inside the household didn't resemble those words at all. So the guys I'm working with right now, the pushback as far as higher power is concerned is, why would any of us really be able to connect right away with a higher power? When our higher power is growing up from 0 to 7 in this day and age, it's probably more like 10 or 12, created an environment where trust was very, very difficult. At least it was for me. I'm speaking for me. To the point where my father, I grew up hating with a passion, hating him. He was a womanizer, he was a bad guy, he was a drunk, he was all different kinds of things. But this was my mother's story of my father. And it was a protective device by her in order to camouflage things that were going on for her. And I met my father as a result of the amends steps when I was sober about 5 years. And I got 4 years with him, and the reason I connected with him was I belonged to a men's group that was programmed people, all of whom were in second stage recovery, and we were given a task to tell our father's story at our gatherings. And I was freaked out big time because I discovered I didn't know my father's story. So I had to find out my father's story. I used to call him in the middle of the night when I was drunk or loaded and tell him all different kinds of ways he could do things to himself that are impossible, and what a rat he was and all the rest of that. And when I was greeted by him in the Houston airport after I told him the purpose of my going, which was to make amends, he had a big moon grin on his face. And when we were walking out of the airport, he looked at me and he said, "Bobby, I know you have a lot of questions. I'll answer anything that you want to know. You can ask me anything. The only rule is that you can't say anything bad about your mother or your mother's family." And I got the opportunity to begin to feel inside what it was like to be connected to the reality as reality is. One of the wonderful things that was being talked about today is that the protective shell that I have put around myself as an ACA had my lenses totally distorted. I could see people as the way I thought they were rather than they really were. Or I would see situations as I wanted to frame them to be or as I thought they should be rather than what they actually are. And this is one of the big time gifts of recovery, and the only way that I know about recovery is literally by working the steps one at a time with a sponsor who's been through the steps. And that's a real gift for me. So, what else did I bring from my family of origin? I brought geographics, I brought dishonesty. I also brought big success stories. My mother was a highly decorated teacher, so watching her succeed, because that was her drive, to look good. And it turned out that she was a fabulous teacher. When she retired, I watched people honor her. And while I was happy for her, literally, in that moment, I was thinking at the same time, where were you for me and for my sister? You know, we didn't get the kind of mentoring that the accolades are coming from. And that was partly responsible for my own drives. This love-hate relationship that I had with my family and also the hatred I had for my father kind of pushed me along in an athletic career, which then substance abuse took away from me. I had a chance to be the kicker for the 49ers in the mid-70s, recruited by Coach Paul Wigan, who coached at Stanford and with the 49ers and played with the Cleveland Browns. And the day that I was to go for the tryout, I was so nervous that I thought maybe I could take the edge off with a little bit of vodka because it couldn't be smelled on my breath. Eventually drank myself into a blackout because I was consuming pills to try to maintain a balance, and I never showed up for the workout. This is the kind of sabotage that that I grew up watching, never thinking that I would recreate that. It was never going to be like my father because I heard how bad a guy he was. In truth, later on, I really wanted to be like my father. And the sabotage that I saw happen in my mother's relationships, in the entire growing up period, she never, ever had a boyfriend. One guy she had affairs with over the course of many, many years. And that was that, because she was so horrified of intimacy. And if I were able to talk to her today, I would want to know more about what happened. The greatest part about the relationship that you guys brought me to with my mother was near the end of her life. I got an opportunity to go up because the nurse, head nurse at the nursing home in Chico, called me and said, she's been pretty lucid for a couple of days. Why don't you come up and visit her? I had made peace with my mother, in essence, getting to forgiveness because of what you taught me. Forgiveness being defined as giving up all hope of a better past. Mm-hmm. I like that definition of forgiveness a lot, giving up all hope of a better past. So I went up to see my mother, took her out to dinner at the Olive Garden in Chico, and she was doodling. Olive Garden's got these children's cartoons and then crayons so you can draw. And she was talking about fairies and different kinds of things because she was in an advanced stage of Alzheimer's. And I was actually having an enjoyable time. I'd gone from despising her, divorcing my family a couple of times, reconnecting, to getting into forgiveness. And then finally lunch was over and I looked at her and I said, Mom, do you want to go back home now or would you like to go out for a little bit of a ride? And she said, let's go for a ride. Okay. So I had an SUV where I had to actually help lift her up into the car. And I did that, walked around to the other side, opened the door, and she was looking at me and she said, I really did a miserable job with you. I'm sorry, are we okay? And I had a clamp down on my lip as emotion was starting to well up inside of me. And I said, yeah, Mom, we're fine. We're good. And she smiled and went right back into drawing pictures in the air and talking about things that she was seeing. Now, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I love the fact that Herb is into words. He's one of my word mentors. Having is current. Had is past tense. I had a spiritual awakening to get in here, and I'm having one even as I'm sharing with you today, because I'm able to give voice to where I was and where I am today. And experiences like reconnecting with my father, reconnecting with my mother, would not have been possible without my own spiritual awakening. In my case, I needed to get to you by beating myself down so far with substance abuse that I had nowhere else to go. I had a failed suicide attempt, and at that, I was beating myself up because I couldn't even get that right. That is not a good mental state for anybody to be in. Not a good mental state. So I was through the steps at about 14 months in the other program, and all of a sudden I realized that, my God, I'm feeling almost as bad as I did when I walked in the doors. And my sponsor, although he was not an Al-Anon member, suggested to me that it sounded like I might have some Al-Anon issues. Why don't you try a few Al-Anon meetings? So on the 17th of May, 1989, I walked into the Sunnyvale Al-Anon meeting with a ACA focus. That's how it was listed in the meeting directory. I had no clue what ACA focus was, not even a glimmer of an idea. And the fellow that chaired the meeting that night told my story. And I cried almost the entire meeting. Felt so connected. And began the journey through the steps in Al-Anon, subsequently in ACA and CODA. Now, I saw in the program that George wrote that I'd been in recovery since 1977. That made me cranky when I read that, because I actually got sober in 88. However, she's absolutely right. In 1977, my sister brought me the 20 questions card with her sponsor and her sponsor's fiance in a big book, and she had the 20 questions folded back underneath, and she gave me a pen, not a pencil, and asked me to take the test, which I did, and I knew how to flunk tests. So I marked three boxes. The only thing that didn't apply to me was had I ever been hospitalized as a result of my drinking. And the answer to that was no. I'd been to the hospital as a result of my drinking, but I wasn't admitted, so it didn't count. But I figured by marking only three boxes, I'd flunk the test, and I was horrified to turn the bottom of the card up to see that by answering just one, you had a very high probability of being alcoholic. I didn't even know what being an alcoholic was. I just couldn't see that having that substance taken away from me could be a good idea, because I, as I've learned, didn't know what I didn't know, and I couldn't see what I couldn't see. But it was a seed planting experience, and my sister would call me every year on her birthday. And she'd say, hi, I've got a year. And I would look at the phone and think, why are you telling me that? What a crock. By her third year, my heart was on fire. Her life was dramatically changing. Mine was getting worse. I believe it's true, just as true in ACA as it is in other programs, that our disease is first fun, then fun plus problems, and eventually nothing but problems. Because as an ACA, I hid. Nobody really knew how I was feeling. Why should I tell anybody how I'm feeling? I don't come from a trusting position. I've moved all these times. I can't connect with anybody. Am I going to share about me with you? Not a chance. Not a chance. So I began the journey of recovery in second stage recovery earlier than almost everybody that I got sober with did. And I'm really, really grateful for that. Some of the things that began to happen were I joined that men's group. And as I began to write inventories, I came from a sponsorship grouping that you had to go all the way through the steps every year or you couldn't pick up your chip. That was the rule. And if I had something come up and I was not in resolve with it, my sponsor would never give me more than three cracks at venting about the same subject without instructing me to put a pen in my hand and write out, I'm powerless over fill in the blank. I hate it still today that I'm powerless over all this stuff, and I love it because I can't get it into the steps until I accept that premise of powerlessness over whatever it is that I'm dealing with. So I began to have issues come up. And eventually that got to the resolve about my father. So I was somewhere in the three-year mark in recovery when I went to San Jose and I attended a conference called Life Balance. And in those days, Patrick Carnes, Brad Shaw, Pia Melody, Melody Beatty, Raquel Lerner, I'm mentioning people not to impress you, but just to say that these people were pioneers and they're coming forth with information that over the course of time has been helpful to so many of us. And this conference was about intimacy, and I heard one speaker after another talk about what intimacy was, into me you see, or me being me and letting you see me. And when I had finished that weekend, I wanted what these people had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. And I actually got down on my knees as if I was an eight-year-old praying. And I said, I'm willing to go to any lengths. I'll do whatever. I want what these people have. Within minutes, I was getting phone calls. Bob, I loaned you $20. You're supposed to pay me back last Tuesday. Are you okay? You're supposed to meet me for coffee. Are you okay? And what I began to learn at a different level at that time, which is a core of my recovery today, is accountability. I can't always say that I step up to the plate and am accountable. But I have people in my lives that help me be accountable. This is this inner core circle, or as time goes on, I develop some trust. I'm afraid that some business deal is going haywire because I'm in business for myself and there's some bad signals going on. And do I want to admit this? No, because I have sense of failure stuff from way, way back that I process. But because of you, I have the guts to make a phone call and talk to somebody about it and then hear back, something doesn't sound right. It saved my bacon a number of times, including in some pretty big ways, because I've learned to trust you guys. So some of the things that have happened in my recovery are pretty unbelievable. In the house where I had the most abuse happen, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional incest, Wilmette, Illinois, this was supposed to be the house of love and grace. I heard a speaker say that if you want to do some healing, if it's possible, go back and physically visit these places where things had happened. And I went back to Wilmette as a result of being a tour escort on a tour for a company I was, mentoring in. And I went back to the house and I knocked on the door. And a young woman answered with a young child in tow. And I said, I used to live here, grew up here. And she said, would you like to come in? I couldn't believe it. I mean, a perfect stranger standing at your front door making a statement like that with no corroboration. But again, this is what happens to us. This is my experience when we're connected to spirit. And I went into the house and it had hardly changed at all. The one room that echoed goodness to me, and the only time the family got together in a healthy way, was after church on Sundays. Everybody was there and they were all talking. It was, what do they call that? Sunday supper. It was, the big meal was after church, and then there were snacks in the evening. Sunday supper. That I could feel. I could feel it when I walked in the room and I saw the dining room. And then the rest of the house was very, very eerie and strange for me. And my bedroom was all the way up on the very top in the attic, been turned into a bedroom. And when I went up the stairs to the second story, the room where some bad stuff happened to me was closed, not accessible. And I wanted to go in that door. I wanted to go in that door and get angry and get rid of that and release some of that rage, really, not anger, that was going on, in spite of the fact that I'd processed, wasn't available. Then I watched this woman walk up the stairs. Her child was 8, the same age when I moved into that house. And I heard her say her son's name. There's a man here who was your age when he was here. Would it be all right with you for him to come up and see the room? Here is a healthy, honoring statement, mother to son. And I rejoiced. It was emotional, but I rejoiced because, you know, I was witnessing something that was truly healthy. And when I walked up the stairs, I go up the stairway, there's a door just to the left, runs all the way along the back wall, and there's a door on the other side. And I spent a lot of time in that storage area hiding. Bobby, where are you? I'm not coming out. And I would just stay there. This is where the isolation really began to take place. So I went into the room, and in this little cubby hole was a square box with a handle on it and athletic toys in this box. I had a square box with a handle on it with that athletic toys in it in the identical place. I don't know if our family, when we moved, left that box there. I don't know, but it was astonishing to be in that space looking at something similar, except as a healthy environment from when I had been there. And I turned around and I was looking over at the storage area, and this woman looked at me and she said, would you like to look in that door? And her son was standing there, and I said, yes, I would. So I went over to the storage area and I opened it up, and the fiberglass and asbestos smell was in that house, and I was like warped backwards. I could feel what it was like to be in there exactly as I had been, yet standing as a man in recovery, wanting what you give me, wanting what I was becoming. And I leaned in and I said, Bobby, come out. I'll take care of you. Never had that coached. It just came out from inside me somewhere. And I began to weep and was hiccuping a little bit. This woman never changed her expression except to look at me in a very kind way. The boy wasn't freaked out. Inexplicable. You know, it says to me that there are really healthy people around, and it helps me to aspire to grow closer to that place, to have insides and outsides match as a result of the program. I wasn't done there yet. I have been back to that house 4 times. 2-3 years ago was the last time I was there. Beth was with me. The other times that I went back, that door was always closed where the abuse happened. And each time, there's been a different family living in the house, and each time, we have been welcomed in. And the last time I went in there, the door to that bedroom was open, and I felt calm. Another time had arrived, so I had some forgiveness of myself, And one of the things that my sponsor is constantly talking to me about, our therapist is constantly talking to me about, is always to put the club away. Better than put it back in the holster is throw that sucker away. Because beating ourselves up over anything is not useful, not helpful, not functional. Well, it may be functional, but not functioning in the right way for me. And it just serves no purpose. So this is something that when I make myself more available to honoring the space that I'm in right now, as opposed to the space where I think I should be or somebody else thinks I should be, then I'm having a good recovery day. And I honestly, after being around diligently working the program, cannot get enough of it. My opening part of my day, my home group, is a 7 a.m. meeting. And I need to get kick-started right away to hear the language of recovery and to get connected to all of you, because my mind is getting better and better all the time, but my sponsor reminds me I have a broken brain. And the other thing that I think I want to say, and then perhaps I've shared enough tonight, is that all of us, or most of us, all is a big word. In therapy, in the second year that I was working with this therapist, I was diagnosed with PTSD. I'm a Vietnam-era vet, and I had combat. And I had difficulties with that experience. When I came back, my first few minutes on U.S. soil, walking through an airport, I was spit on. And I didn't feel any anger toward that young man at all, because I had learned that what was going on was ridiculous. And I didn't want to be a part of it either. So that didn't make me angry. But, oh Lord, I lost it again. Where was I going with that?
PTSD.
Ah, thank you. That's what happens when you're getting older. The PTSD diagnosis by my therapist really made sense when she talked about what happens in ACA families of origin, dysfunctional families of origin, is you're seeing one thing and you're being told another. Seeing one thing being told another, it's crazy making. And again, it gets to the core of higher power. You know, if I'm going to work an effective third step, I'm making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. And that concept at first was really difficult for me, because why should I believe in a higher power when I couldn't trust higher powers from the past? And a lot of people will come in, irrespective of what 12-step program we're in, we do steps 1, 2, and 3, we start to feel a lot better. Why wouldn't we? We've admitted our problem. We've admitted we're crazy, and that maybe something outside of us can do something about that. And then we make that decision. That is not turning our will and our lives over. That comes in 4 through 7. And it's so important to get in to 6 and 7 so I can really have the 2-foot drop happen with all of the things I'm dealing with. I even believe that there's some amounts of blaming perpetrators that's healthy, provided the blame isn't being held on to. If I can identify, you did this to me, and then have it hit, I feel the feeling, then I can turn it over. Chuck Chamberlain, who was an AA member, said the process of recovery is uncover, discover, discard. So uncover, discover, discard is only useful if you discover after you've uncovered. At least that's my experience. What else? All right, what I'm about to say has no political basis, but I've noticed, and I don't know if any of you else of you have noticed, some upheaval with your sponsees recently. My sponsees are in crisis. They're going nuts right now. Beth has talked about women she's working with are having difficulties. And in our political climate in this country, we have had so much combativity between the two parties. And now, with the new government being in, there's a lot of whether this is right or wrong, who's right, who's wrong. It's the dysfunctional family system personified 101. I've said this today, it's not true tomorrow. It's okay to make this kind of a statement because it's locker room talk, et cetera, et cetera. Is this or is this not almost identical to a dysfunctional family system? I'm worried, you know. One of the reasons I'm speaking out about this is that all of us, as we're in recovery and as we're getting stronger, I think, for me, my best 12-step work is when I have my ears open and I can be a good listener. Because people are going to be crazier and crazier. This is when I said I may have a book coming out. I was talking with Dr. Stephanie Brown, who some of you may have heard in Rancho Palos Verdes at the ACA conference 2 years ago. And she wrote a book called Speed, which has nothing to do with the drug. It's about how our society's on devices all the time, and kids especially. And the suicide rates among teenagers has skyrocketed in the last 10 years. And people are not communicating one-on-one anymore. It's another huge benefit of our program, because we can get together and we can talk to one another and we can identify with what is going on with one another. I won't go on to the internet and participate in a meeting on the internet. I need eye-to-eye contact. I need to learn from mentors. So this coming week, I'm going to be researching whether alcohol consumption has gone up in the last 6 months, whether sales from companies that sell products that are diverting-oriented are going up. I don't think that it's any strange coincidence that marijuana is being legalized in states. You know, any drug that's prescribed, I said I take Strattera. I believe in depression medication because if it's used properly and prescribed properly, it saves lives. So if there's an indication that there's an upswing in the use of diversion chemicals, it's something that I personally want to pay attention to as a 12-stepper to be sure that hopefully as I get healthier, as I become more in tune with my mentors, as I keep trudging the road of happy destiny, as the AA Big Book says, just maybe I'll be able to be available. It's early in the dance, but I know people are struggling right now, and I think there could be maybe some connection. I appreciate so much the opportunity to share with you folks, to be able to look and see people connected and to be a part of something that is so far greater than anything I could have imagined. I really have a good chance of growing up. Thank you very much.